Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, pledging to help end child hunger in the Carolinas through ongoing support of Second Harvest Food Bank of Metrolina. Details about this initiative at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Every 10 years, a census is taken, and data from that census is used to determine population distribution and how to fairly represent that population in Congress, in state legislatures, and more. That process is starting right now, based on the 2020 census. Already in North Carolina, Republican lawmakers have begun to study where people live to determine the outlines of new voting districts. And because our state's population has dramatically increased since 2010, we will be adding a 14th congressional district, while Mecklenburg County adds another seat in the North Carolina House and part of a seat in the state Senate. We'll talk about that. The stakes are high for both political parties, and that is why, in most states, it is a political process. It seems especially so, however, in North Carolina, because we've been recently embroiled in redrawing districts that were gerrymandered to benefit the GOP. In fact, gerrymandering and other shenanigans are generally part of the process, no matter which party is in charge. So this hour, we get a preview of what's to come and just how political it may become. We're joined by WFAE's political reporter, Steve Harrison. Welcome back.
Hey, thanks, Mike. Good morning.
Welcome. Good morning. Chris Cooper is back with us, too. He is the Madison Distinguished Professor of Political Science and Public Affairs at Western Carolina University. Good to see you. Good morning.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
And Jim Blaine, the longest serving intern in the state legislature, is with us. He's a Republican political consultant, former chief of staff for North Carolina State Senate leader Phil Berger, and a partner in The Differentiators, that's a company that consults on policy issues. And the intern reference is to a reference to a sign on your door when you were working in the legislature. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Well, welcome to the program. Good to see you. And Steve, let me start with you. I just mentioned that in North Carolina, state Republican leaders are already at work on redrawing this district. Why Republicans, and do Democrats have any say in this whatsoever? You're muted, Steve. Unmute yourself.
All right. I'm so sorry. Here I go. So across the country, there are different ways states have decided to draw maps. Some states are moving toward independent commissions, but here in North Carolina, the state legislature draws the maps. There's, of course, Republican majorities in both the House and Senate. And one kind of key piece here in North Carolina is that the governor does not have any say. He does not have a veto over maps. So while we've gotten used to the Republican legislature passing bills, Cooper vetoing them, that will not be the case. The question will be kind of what the map making process will look like this time. The GOP has said that it is going to kind of follow the model from 2019, which was a relatively open process. Democrats felt it was reasonably fair. Of course, that process was put in place because of the courts ordered them to. But that's kind of the big question is like, well, how aggressive will the legislature be? How quick will Democrats be to sue? And where this whole process is going to unfold over the next couple months.
And for Democrats out there beating their heads against the wall because of this process being controlled by Republicans, this is another example of why elections matter. Chris Cooper, according to the New York Times, at first blush, the quote, this month's release of census data held great news for Democrats in that it painted a portrait of considerably more urban and metropolitan nation with increasingly Democratic metropolitan areas, bustling with new arrivals, and rural Republican heartland areas steadily losing residents. Those same trends appear to be in operation here in North Carolina, but will those trends make any difference here?
You know, I mean, certainly they'll make some difference, but I think we need to remember the census isn't a new reality. It is measurement catching up to reality. What I mean by that is these migration patterns, people living increasingly in urban areas, rural areas losing population, that was already present before we ever measured this stuff, right? And so we measured, we took the measurement for the census at about the same time we had the last election. So yes, this really matters for redistricting and it matters for the way we draw these lines. But in terms of representing some kind of new political reality, it really doesn't represent that at all.
But does it give policymakers, lawmakers, whether they're Republican or Democrat in states where this is, where the population distribution is changing, does it give them an opportunity to take corrective measures? They looked at the last couple of elections where people have moved and clearly areas got stronger or weaker. Now they can fix that in the redraw. Is that essentially what they'll be doing?
Yeah, essentially, that's what we'll try to do, right? So right now, some people's votes are sort of overrepresented, if you will, meaning they have fewer people for every representative. And other areas are over, you know, some are underrepresented, some are overrepresented. So exactly what the redistricting process is meant to do, whether Democrats are drawing the lines or Republicans are drawing the lines, is to sort of equalize population throughout the state, make sure that it is one person, one vote once again.
Jim, the headline to that article about the census in the New York Times that I referred to a moment ago reads, the census shows a nation that resembles its future more than its past. But then the article points out that the census also reveals America as it is, but as it is, America is not very democratic, meaning that much of the nation is under Republican control. And if that's the case, how long can a minority of the country control the majority of the country without major problems developing, or have they already developed?
So, Mike, I read that article. I can't remember if they said the nation was not very big D democratic or little d democratic because they were under Republican control. Do you remember if that was
I think it's big D Democrat. They were referring to the Democratic Party.
If it
Party.
Was a little D, I would say it looks like the New York Times editorialists have once again marched over to the news page through the Chinese firewall and inserted some opinion into some alleged news coverage. But if it's big D, that's correct. And I think, Chris makes a good point and the article makes a good point. Let me back up. When we talk about federal redistricting and we talk about state legislative redistricting, they're very different things. To amplify Chris's point, the redraw and the redistricting process here in North Carolina, at the congressional level, you'll get what are called zero deviation districts. Every district will be the same population, and so they'll be perfectly balanced. At the state level, the state courts, and I think this is relatively common in most other states, have allowed a deviation above zero. And in North Carolina, it's 5%. So that's how the redraws take place in North Carolina. And that's kind of the difference between the congressional and the state. But also, as we get into this, there's some really significant differences in the rules that govern the redrawing of the state legislative districts and the redrawing of congressional districts. But the point I'd make in reference to the New York Times article is it is true and there's a rapid migration of people, well, not necessarily rapid, an ongoing migration of people to urban areas around the country. But there is often a misconception about what that means, Mike. So Mecklenburg County is growing. And Mecklenburg County is increasingly Democratic, and it's a Democratic county. It's growing, and it's growing rapidly. But actually, Cabarrus County and Union County and Gaston County are growing as fast or faster than Mecklenburg County and are Republican. So the migration to urban areas is not necessarily a purely, it's not necessarily a phenomenon that just benefits Democrats. And I think it's important for people to think about this migration in terms of the larger metro regions and the fact that there are, substantial, especially in North Carolina, some substantial Republican counties, Johnston, Brunswick, Union, that are among the fastest growing counties and are actually growing at a faster rate than the biggest counties like Wake and Mecklenburg. And so keep that in mind as you think about this, and be careful to not have a big city bias in terms of how you perceive what you read in the New York Times.
As we talk about what's going on in North Carolina with this redraw, Chris Cooper, it may look like we're banging on Republicans. So I think a little history lesson might be in order here. You point out that when Democrats were in charge, they drew districts in the 1940s that ran west to east and which were referred to as Bacon Strips. You can explain why in a minute. And then in the 1980s, the Wall Street Journal referred to a democratically drawn district here as political pornography. Is that what Democrats did when they were in charge, comparable to what people think Republicans have done and are doing now?
You know, whether it's, I think in some ways it may be easier to draw gerrymandered districts now, just computer technology, but there is no question that the Democrats were absolutely trying to draw lines to benefit themselves. So these Bacon Strips were called that because they looked like strips of bacon running west to east across the state. And that was when the Democrats controlled everything in the state of North Carolina, right? We were essentially a one-party South and a one-party North Carolina, yet the Democrats still wanted to squash any potential for any Republican control. In the 1980s, again, this political pornography line, you know, you sort of know it when you see it, but that was a description of a democratically drawn district. And so I went even this morning and was looking back the last time the Democrats drew the district lines in 1991, and it's almost a mirror image of the articles you read today in the Charlotte Observer or the Raleigh News and Observer or the Asheville Citizen Times or anywhere else. It is the Republican Party saying, man, we really need an independent redistricting committee. And the Democrats saying, nah, I think we kind of got this thing going pretty well the way we need it to go. And so when party control changes, of course, the perspectives on redistricting change. So yes, I think the ills and the evils of gerrymandering are one that both parties experience. Just happens to be in the state of North Carolina, the Republicans are the ones in control.
So, Steve, we've been talking about redistricting on this program for a long time because we've been embroiled in several controversies in the last several years. We've been drawing and redrawing districts and courts getting involved in the process. Ultimately, one Republican lawmaker proposed drawing voter maps to give a partisan advantage to 10 Republicans and 3 Democrats because he said, I do not believe it's possible to draw a map with 11 Republicans and 2 Democrats. And one of those legislative maps, the court struck them down, saying they'd been drawn with surgical precision to disenfranchise segments of the population. So we live in what's left of a democracy here. Why is the system set up this way, Steve? Seems crazy.
Well, I mean, you know, going back to what, you know, Chris said about the legislature. When you're in control, the system, the way it's set up, seems like it's a good benefit to you. And if you think about, you know, it's kind of like when you're in the minority party, as you are here in North Carolina, you want the maps to be as balanced as possible. But then if you go look at a place like Oregon, where the state will get one more congressional seat, I think Oregon is now 4-1, I believe, for the Democrats' advantage. And so, you know, of course, Republicans would say, well, we need to get that extra seat, should be in our favor, you know. And of course, you know, neither side would be willing. If your party controls it, you almost, there's an obligation to hold court and to draw the map as most effectively as you can. The big question here in North Carolina, we go from 13 to 14 seats. I think the question will be, will the Republicans try and do a 9-5 map? Yeah. Or will they kind of step on the gas and try and go 10-4? I don't think you can actually do a 10-4 map today the way the state is set up. I think it'd be too hard.
I want to come back to that in a second. Chris, I have 20 seconds. Is part of the reason we do it this way because the founding fathers never perceived or predicted political parties?
I think they did perceive political parties. Jefferson said, I wouldn't go to heaven but with a party. But then he said, if I had to be a member of a party, here's the one I'd choose.
We have to take a break. We'll come right back with more at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to Mazda's focus to ensure every element of a car is designed around the driver. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on Listener Funded, 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about redistricting, redrawing the districts because of the 2020 census with Steve Harrison, WFAE's political reporter, Chris Cooper, professor of political science and public affairs at Western Carolina University, and Jim Blaine, a GOP political consultant, former chief of staff to Senate leader Phil Berger. Jim, both political parties engage in gerrymandering, as we have said, when Democrats controlled North Carolina. They did it just as we just talked about. But a Washington Post article, let's shift our gaze at newspapers further south here, that article in the Post about redistricting But a Washington Post article about redistricting that occurred in states around the nation in the wake of the 2010 census, their headline reads, "Republicans are so much better than Democrats at gerrymandering." And they cited how districts have been drawn to benefit the GOP. Is the GOP better at this, or are they just in charge more often today?
Mike, there's something you said in the last segment that I want to touch on that I think we need to be really careful about. You said what's left of our democracy, and I would really encourage you, be careful about talking like that. I actually think we have a very robust democracy, and that that sort of rhetoric is, we have a polarized electorate, but that's where we have a robust democracy. I would just make that point. I think we should be careful about how we talk about our institutions. Both parties, Chris, and I need to get Chris to give me the lowdown on this. He's figured out how to get paid a couple hundred dollars an hour to provide redistricting advice to the Democratic Party here in North Carolina. I need to figure out how to do that myself. But he definitely was dead on. The advent of computer software and block level census data, I think, created the opportunity to draw more radical shapes and traversals of counties than has ever existed before. And it's probably the progenitor of the really egregious gerrymanders you see on both sides of the aisle. I actually think that the litigation that's taken place in North Carolina, and obviously, Chris is very familiar with it. He's been an expert witness in it. And y'all are probably relatively familiar with it. I actually think the litigation that's taken place in North Carolina over the last decade is getting very close in the state legislative arena to creating what I would describe as a formulaic draw. They're increasingly a set of rules that the court has put in place that, ironically, you can dump into these computer systems, and it'll basically spit out a map that best complies with the court-ordered and legislatively adopted criteria. And I actually think that in large measure, that's the long-term, a formulaic draw is the long-term answer to the most egregious gerrymanders you see. But you do have Republicans have an advantage in terms of almost any set of districts, that any set of district maps that exist in any state in the country, because their voters tend to be dispersed more evenly across the geography of the country. Democratic voters have chosen to congregate in kind of dense, specific sections of geography. And I think you referred to earlier, city centers. And Republicans have spread out. So while you have counties in North Carolina that vote over 70% Republican, they tend to be really small counties with 10,000, 12,000 people. You have counties in North Carolina that vote over 80% Democratic, like Durham, that are enormous, like the fifth biggest county in the entire state. And it creates a situation where Democrats can compete in statewide elections with Republicans. And we see that over and over again in North Carolina. But any sort of districting arrangement is going to benefit the party that is more evenly spread across the geography. And that, in most parts of the country, including North Carolina, tends to be Republicans. So I think that is something to bear in mind as you think about these redistricting processes. And the one thing that I'll illustrate this for you is basically the 2016 election in North Carolina was a governor's election was a 50-50 race. Cooper got about half the vote. Corey got about half the vote. It's very interesting to look at how they got there. McCrory won somewhere between 2/3 and 3/4 of the counties in the state to reach his 50%. Cooper won somewhere between 1/4 and 2/3 of the counties to get the same amount of votes. So if you think about that in terms of a districting arrangement that takes into account, a lot of the things that, folks like Chris have served as expert witnesses for in terms of requesting that county boundaries be honored, city lines be honored, precinct lines be honored. It creates some sort of marginal advantage for Republicans in the districting arrangement. So I would not necessarily say that Republicans are better at gerrymandering. They've just been more fortuitous in terms of how the people that vote for them have chosen to locate their domiciles. And that can change over time. That was not the case in North Carolina 20 or 30 years ago. The Democrats had the advantage. So I actually think that that is the reason Republicans may appear to have an advantage in most districting arrangements.
Chris, you want to take issue with or agree with any or all of that?
I don't want to take issue at all with the facts about the way that voters tend to be distributed around the state. Studies have been done in North Carolina say that it has less of an impact in North Carolina than other states. So certainly, I think the facts are real there. I guess the only thing I'd push back on at all, I never have been a consultant to help Democrats draw district lines at all, nor would I. I was an expert witness in the one case, and both sides have expert witnesses. And I believed that after I studied it, that those previous state legislative maps were gerrymandered and the court agreed. But I've never helped anybody draw a district line outside of my classroom.
So let's talk about what's at stake here. And let's begin with Congress. Democrats in Congress hold a very narrow majority. In the Senate, Vice President Harris has to be called upon to break any ties. In the House, they're hanging on by a thread, as Democrats are. They have a 220 to 211 majority at the moment, and because of the 2020 census, this state will gain another House district, the 14th Congressional District. There are other states also gaining districts. Some are losing a district. All things being equal, though, Chris, how might that tip the balance?
I think we don't know exactly how it's going to tip the balance, and I realize that's not the fun answer to give, but it really is true. Right? We know that certain places are gaining and certain are losing, but we also don't know what those maps are going to look like. I think the institutions that we have in all these states matters. I think Steve pointed out at the very beginning the power that our governor in North Carolina does not have veto power over redistricting. And I think it's really interesting and ironic to look back at the person who drew that bill up that gave the governor veto power in North Carolina, but not over redistricting, was a Democratic legislator named Roy Cooper. So essentially, Roy Cooper made this bed that in some ways he's having to lie in today. So I think all these various institutional structures that vary by state are going to, perhaps change exactly who ends up having majority control.
New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Steve, are scheduled to lose a seat in the House. And Florida, Texas, and North Carolina are going to gain a seat, at least in the House. Those two states, Florida and Texas, among ours, the three states, controlled by Republicans. Any question that the seats in the House that will be drawn for those states are going to be going to favor Republican candidates?
Yeah, I think the big three. Texas gains two, that's a Republican draw. Florida gains one, that's a Republican draw. And then here in North Carolina, the same thing. The Democrats have some advantages, but like you said, I think overall, the way the map is changing, it does favor Republicans. The GOP might be able to essentially take control of the House based on the redraw, because like you said, it's only a 9-seat difference. I think here in North Carolina, the current map is 8-5. I do think it's hard because of the increase in population and the increase of Democratic voters in the cities. There was that old map you talked about, Mike, that was 10-3, right? I think it's going to be very difficult to have a map is advantageous to Republicans is that old map. I just think there are too many. The cities now, like Mecklenburg County, is too big. Alma Adams's district, right, the 12th district, has to get geographically smaller. There's too many voters. And so most of those voters are Democrats. They have to go somewhere. They're going to get put in a district, a Republican district, that will make it more blue, and it's going to be a toss-up district. So I think that the new map will be a little more balanced than that map from the mid-decade.
Is that, Jim, because we don't want the Republicans don't want to have to deal with this in court for several years, fighting this out? Have they been tempered somewhat, or do you see them being just as aggressive as in the past?
Well, Mike, a couple points. One, most of the major redistricting decisions that the U.S. Congress has that you hear about, Cromartie, Jingles, et cetera, they're named for residents of North Carolina, because North Carolina is the most litigated state in redistricting, both by Republicans and Democrats. So if there is a adopted redistricting plan this year, there will be litigation. And perhaps people like Chris and I can get hired to give our opinions on it. So, you know, maybe it's a job creator. So there will be litigation no matter what the map is. I think I agree with Steve generally that if the people that draw the map follow the principles that I've seen the redistricting committee adopt in terms of whole counties and stuff like that, you would probably see something on the order of, somewhere between 4 and 6 or 7 Democrats. I think it's maybe hard to draw a 7 Democratic seat congressional map and follow county lines. I'm not sure. Chris may know better. But
the whole county rule that you're referring to is that a district has to contain the entire county, correct?
Well, there's in North Carolina legislative maps, there's a constitutional provision that prohibits the splitting of counties, and the court has interpreted basically that to be as much as practicable and has made some rules about it. For Congress, what I saw, and I guess they haven't adopted them yet, but the proposed redistricting criteria that are on the legislative committee's website I was looking at this morning, Chris may look at the same thing, say that they want to divide basically as few counties as possible. So that really kind of limits the mischief they can get up to. But, you know, I think it's important to point out, too, I don't think redistricting decides the outcome of Congress, Mike. I mean, I think it's a really bad thing to push. Think about it this way. Between 1930 and 1993, there were only two-year periods when Republicans controlled the U.S. House of Representatives. There were two-year periods in that 60-year span. After legislatures redrew maps, after the Voting Rights Act was really started to be enforced in earnest in the 1990s, the maps that were adopted in 1990, the maps that were adopted in 2000, and the maps that were adopted in 2010, in every single one of those three redistricting cycles, the Democratic Party controlled Congress for a portion of that 10-year period based on the maps that were drawn by the legislatures or the commissions, and the Democratic Party controlled the U.S. Congress for a portion of that 10-year period. I would bet money that you experience Democratic control in this coming 10-year cycle and Republican control. The country is that evenly divided and that robust, and there's just not that much redistricting mischief that can be gotten up to that alters the control of Congress. You know, and I think that the last 30 years shows that.
So, Steve, we're about to get a 14th congressional district in this state. Any guesses as to where that may be located?
So, no. I mean, if the Democrats were drawing the map, I think they would love to see maybe a seat centered around Fayetteville. That would be advantageous to them. But we really don't know. That's probably not going to happen. There's this idea that Tim Moore, the House Speaker, would like to be in Congress. And so then you perhaps draw a district, a Cleveland County district. It's really, it's kind of like what Jim said, where with the state legislative maps, there's not a lot of wiggle room to do crazy things. but the congressional map is like a totally open canvas. And who knows? Who knows where it's going to be?
Except for the restraints that the court has put on them. And then it looks to me, Steve, like the restraints that they're going to put on themselves, maybe to Mike's point, that they're tired of drawing four maps every 10 years instead of one, and paying monstrous attorney's fees. So I think, from that standpoint, there are some restraints. I don't think you're going to see a district that looked anything like the 12th district the Democrats drew in 1991 and in 2002 that kind of ran from Charlotte to Durham at one point in time. I mean, that sort of stuff is gone. From that standpoint, I think there are litigation, court orders, and self-restraint appear to have curbed the most egregious excesses of the redistricting.
Speaking of the 12th congressional district, Steve, you say that Alma Adams' district will get smaller demographically because she has to lose voters because of population growth. That sounds very contradictorial, if that's a word. Explain that. Why is that?
Yeah, so her district is now, I think the ideal, each of the congressional districts, I believe, will be about 750,000 people. She is about 150,000 people too big. So and her district now is almost all of Mecklenburg County except South Charlotte. So, her district has to lose voters. And so it will kind of shrink geographically. And going back to this idea of these guidelines that Republicans have put in place to try and keep counties whole, that would mean that really, if they follow the guidelines, that's a big if, that then there would be, only another, that those voters would go into one other district. And so I think that's 150,000 new people, not as many voters, of course. It's a lot of Democrats. If you put them in the 9th district, the one that goes, from Charlotte to Union County, that's going to make the 9th district more Democratic. If you put them anywhere you put them, it is going to make that adjacent district more of a balanced district. So I think a lot of people, a lot of candidates are probably watching this to see, what does this new district look like? Can I run in this district? Do I have a chance of winning? People like Dan McCready, I assume. Would he want to try again? He wants to see what this looks like.
So will this rebalancing put Alma Adams' seat in jeopardy for her and for Democrats? So is it more likely that Republicans can gain that seat?
No, that will be a safe Democratic seat.
Okay.
No question.
When we come back, we're going to talk about the stakes with regard to withdrawing the districts in legislative areas in North Carolina. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to those who believe a car should stir one's emotions and deliver a heightened state of driving. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're here with Steve Harrison, our political reporter at WFAE News. Jim Blaine is the GOP political consultant. Chris Cooper is professor of political science and public affairs at Western Carolina University. The U.S. Supreme Court ruled in 2019, Chris, that federal judges have no jurisdiction over partisan gerrymandering. Racial gerrymandering is illegal, but given the way things are, there are partisan considerations in this. And given the fact that our state grew in population by 9.5% in the last decade, more than half of the state's 100 counties lost population, while many of the state's congressional districts have become overpopulated. When you sit down as a Republican to draw these maps, what considerations what are you considering as you draw the maps?
So actually, I think Jim's done a really good job pointing out like one central thing for folks to remember, which is the considerations at the General Assembly level and the considerations at the congressional level are slightly different, right? And so Jim talked, I think, very well about the differences in population equality. Essentially, you got to nail the number for Congress, whereas for the General Assembly, it's plus or minus 5%. Okay, so you have different rules there. We have the whole county provision, which says that when you need to keep counties together. The General Assembly has said that they will not use partisan data, that they will not use racial data, but that they will consider incumbency. So I think the very few folks would disagree with excluding partisan data. I think most folks think that's a good thing. There's some disagreement about racial data when it comes to incumbency advantage. I think there's also some disagreement. So they have some kind of broad parameters, and then what the Republicans try to do, obviously, I don't know. I don't know what the intent would be. I think if they do what most parties do when they're in power, they're going to try to draw these lines within the bounds that they have to benefit themselves as much as they can. I think that's often what parties do. I think generally speaking, that's what people with power do.
And we mentioned, Steve, that rural areas here and around the country have lost population to urban areas, but that trend, you say, does not look like it's going to help Democrats much within the state of North Carolina in terms of legislative districts.
So I think it helps in some ways if you're a Democrat, because you have some of these rural districts that have to, you know, get geographically bigger because they're losing population. But if you kind of shift to Mecklenburg County, this, you know, very Democratic county, after the 2018 election, all 12 House members, state House members, were Democrats. And then in 2020, Republicans won one back. So they have 11 of 12. So there'll be a 13th seat. But when you draw the district smaller, when you go to 13, it kind of gives Republicans a little opening, right? Because maybe you have now a seat in Matthews and Mint Hill. That's a Republican area. So I think it's no guarantee that when you add that 13th seat in Mecklenburg or an extra seat in Wake County, that it's going to automatically go to Democrats, because they've already kind of run up the score in Mecklenburg County as much as they can.
Steve, I think that's an excellent point. And I would point out, too, Mecklenburg County votes about 35% Republican on average. So to some extent, it would take a pretty egregious and calculated gerrymander to get zero seats going to Republicans when you have, you know, a couple hundred thousand people that vote Republican in the county. So, yeah, I think two or three seats. I think that's an excellent insight, Steve. I think two or three seats are likely in Mecklenburg County to end up at least competitive for Republicans, if not advantageous for them.
Chris, you point out that while members of Congress don't have to live in the districts in which they represent, members of the General Assembly do in North Carolina. So how does that fact figure into incumbency protection as we redraw these maps?
Yeah, it means it's a lot more powerful for the General Assembly than it is for Congress. So if we kind of move to my neck of the woods for a second, the 11th Congressional District, we're not going to weigh in on Madison Cawthorn for one moment here, but obviously he's getting a lot of attention. And we have, I think it's 13 people who are already running for the 11th Congressional District before we ever know what the lines are. Well, it does. You're not seeing the same thing at the General Assembly level. And the reason is because you can declare, you can be able to see the coast from your house and run in the mountains for Congress, or see Mount Mitchell from your house and run in Nag's Head if you want to. But you can't do that for the General Assembly. So the power of that incumbency protection provision, I think, holds a lot more weight when we talk about the General Assembly than when we talk about Congress.
In a recent blog, Jim, Chris wrote that there is still considerable uncertainty about what the new General Assembly maps will look like in North Carolina. Can we depend nonetheless on continued Republican control?
Well, I think my business partner and I have written pretty extensively on our blog about this too. There's a what's known as the base map, the optimal grouping map, is available for the legislative districts. And honestly, in the Senate this year, that pretty much set the map in stone. There are a couple of urban areas where they've got to decide how to draw the districts within the larger counties. There's more flexibility in the House maps, but not a tremendous amount. I think you've got a pretty good idea of what the maps look like. And I just want to say, personally, I think incumbency shouldn't be a factor. I agree with Chris in the maps. I actually think that legislators adopting incumbency as a criteria in the redistricting process feeds this narrative of legislators picking their voters instead of voters choosing their elected officials. So I wish they wouldn't use it. I do agree that I disagree with Chris. I actually think incumbency is more powerful in Congress because you don't have to be in your district. There are a number of powerful legislators that are going to end up in the same district together because of the whole county provision, the way the counties have to be put together. And there is nothing they can do about it. So I actually think incumbency and the residency requirement and the legislature works against current elected officials to some extent. In Chris's neck of the woods, there's a great example. The chairman of the Senate Education Committee, Deanna Ballard, and the chairman of the Budget Writing Committee, Ralph Heiss, are going to end up in the same state Senate district. So, and there's nothing that they can do to change that. So I actually wish that legislators would not adopt incumbency as a criteria. I don't think it should be one. I think it's not good for redistricting. It's not good for people's confidence in the process. And I will disagree with Chris on the relative power of incumbency between the legislature and Congress.
You want to respond to that? Okay, Steve, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say one thing, kind of piggybacking off this idea of incumbency and having to live in your district. In Mecklenburg County, you know, Mike, you said earlier, we have five state Senate seats now. We will get part of a sixth seat because of our population growth. But for Mecklenburg County Democrats, one of the problems is most likely that sixth seat will be in North Mecklenburg and stretch into Iredell County. Natasha Marcus, a Democratic state senator, lives in Davidson. So she may, or, you know, with high probability, be lumped into an Iredell County seat that will be very Republican. And so, you know, in 2020, when we do another 10 years, Mecklenburg County will have an entire sixth state Senate seat on its own. But right now it only has a piece of one, and that piece of a seat may go to a Republican because just kind of the way the rules are set up.
And you've also said, Steve, that after having looked at data for a new Wake-Granville grouping, it should generate two toss-up seats and four Democratic seats up there. You say that means that in the future, Democrats can only have a path to a state Senate majority if they win all six seats in Wake County. That's their only hope. Explain how you know that.
Well, that was something I think maybe Jim and I, we talked about that on the phone a while ago, that kind of your analysis is that for Democrats to take a majority, they have to kind of run the table in these urban areas. And
that's in the House map, Steve.
House map. Okay.
I actually think the Senate map, if Democrats could marginally improve their performance or, you know, put forward a little more moderate candidates in some of these growing suburban counties like Cabarrus, you know, especially over the next 10 years as the demographics of the state that you know, Chris has pointed out change. You know, I think the state Senate map is going to be pretty competitive. The state House map just shook out in a way that was particularly beneficial to Republicans because of the whole county provisions. And I think the Democrats really do need to run the table in Mecklenburg and Wake County in order to have a chance at the majority. So I don't know. I'd be curious what Chris's thoughts are on that. I'm sure he's looked at this as much or more than I have.
Chris?
Yeah, I mean, whether they need to run the table or not, I don't know. But I think of course, you're right in the direction of the argument that the Democrats have got to take every opportunity that they've got. And those opportunities tend to be in the urban areas, right? There are some exceptions. Sort of to jump back a minute on the whether incumbency protection is stronger in one place or the other, I agree with your point that the Stevenson criteria, which is when we talk about county groupings, essentially Stevenson says, yeah, you got to consider counties in certain clusters that equalize population and roughly hang together geographically. Okay. So sometimes you're absolutely right. Of course, Stevenson will require that you do double bunk some people, whether you mean to or not. And I think I believe that's a point you were referring to. And I certainly agree with that. At the same time, the two members of Congress that are double bunked could theoretically run in another district without moving. So, which is kind of my point. Yeah, go ahead, Mike. Sorry.
I was going to say that Rebecca is emailing a question. If we can use technology to draw gerrymandered lines, why can't we use it to create fairly drawn district lines? And also, why can't the governor make an executive order to require fairly drawn district lines?
I'll take that.
Jim, go ahead.
Well, I think my response to Rebecca would be what she is talking about kind of is a process that's happening. I think if you look at North Carolina, I think the technology that gave legislators the ability in the early 2000s and late 90s it was really expensive technology and only they could get their hands on it. And it allowed them to draw some really bizarre looking districts. That technology is now out in the hands of the public through cloud computing, and it's affordable, and it's informing more people about district drawing. There are tons of professors like Chris across the country that have their classes drawing districts and putting them out there. And I actually think that that technology is aiding courts in creating a system in North Carolina that is approaching what I've always advocated for, which is a formulaic draw. And so you're getting really close to dumping all that stuff into a computer and spitting out a map that best complies with a court and legislative criteria. Now, of course, the courts will still have a role in what those criteria are, and that could impact it. But you're in a lot fairer place than you were in the mid 60s, where the Democrats drew a guy named Jim Gardner's. He almost won in 1962, so they drew a district a guy named Harold Cooley, who was a long-serving Democratic power broker in North Carolina. He won in 66 in the new redrawn district, so they drew him another district that really hosed him, and so he ran for governor and lost. So long story, but you know, that sort of stuff is kind of out the window, and I think what Rebecca's talking about is coming to fruition. And probably will happen in the next decade.
This census data will trickle down to local races as well, Steve. Mecklenburg County Commission is populated entirely at the moment by Democrats. There are only two Republicans on Charlotte City Council. They're obviously in the minority. What impact will these census numbers have on how those districts are drawn? Because they'll have to redraw those districts. And is it possible that we will see more Republican representation on commission or council?
I think the most interesting one to watch is city council. And I think in that one, the problem is going to be Republicans could be in trouble, might lose a seat, not through any kind of trickiness on the Democrats' part. But if you look in the city of Charlotte, there is a Southwest Charlotte seat, District 3, that is now really big, has a lot of people. So it has to get geographically smaller because of all that growth. So then, where you look at District 6, which is owned by a Republican, does that get geographically bigger? And if it does get bigger, it pulls in more diverse voters, it pulls in more Democrats. So, I think for the Republicans on city council, just the way the map, the only way to save Republicans on city council or give them a cushion is to add an extra district seat to make those districts even smaller. The bigger they get, then the more Democrats you're just going to pull in. Can't do anything about it.
Might that happen? A smaller drawing the district so that they're smaller?
So there was a committee last year that this kind of governance committee, I think we talked about it on the show that the mayor created, talked about a lot of different things. One of the recommendations was to have an extra district seat. Mm-hmm. There were other things like four-year terms and pay raises. What happened was the city council kind of ignored, discarded all of the recommendations except for pay raises. So, I don't think there'll be a seventh district seat. Nope.
Okay. Very quickly, Jim, because we're very short on time. There's a lot of gnashing of teeth among Democrats because Republicans control so many legislatures and these remap draws are going on right now. And they may favor Republicans, but Democrats in North Carolina, at least, controlled this state for years. And after 140 years, Republicans, despite gerrymandering, took control. Is that an argument or for evidence that overcoming gerrymandering is, in fact, possible?
Well, number one, I think gerrymandering increasingly is in the eye of the beholder. So you're getting, people look at the outcome regardless of the process. And if they don't get the outcome they like, Mike, they call it a gerrymander for the other side, which is unfortunate because I think, at least in North Carolina, you're moving towards a much more criteria-based and formulaic draw. And I think, I just point back to the what we talked about earlier, how Congress has flipped back and forth in the last 30 years. And I think you're going to see the same potential in North Carolina moving forward. It's a super competitive state we're a robust democracy.
Jim Blaine is a GOP political consultant and now a partner in the Differentiators that consults on public policy issues. Chris Cooper is professor of political science and public affairs at Western Carolina University. And Steve Harrison is our political reporter here at WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, pledging to help end child hunger in the Carolinas through ongoing support of Second Harvest Food Bank of Metrolina. Details about this initiative at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.